The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Myself and Conan are here after the last one-sided quarter-final. Keane Ward is coming up in a little while on the show. We recorded some piece with him this morning on the two games on Saturday. So, you know, they were one-sided, Conan. And the idea in the GAA was always, well, listen, we have to put up with a lot of crappy games in provincial championships because the quarter-finals on the bank holiday weekend, that's when the season starts for these big teams. Not anymore, by the looks of things.
Well, let me give a defence of the championship somewhat. It's been very, very good, apart from when the best teams are playing the rest.
Yeah.
Like, they're just too good. They're at a level now that's above everyone else. And that happens in a lot of tournaments and different sports. The best will always rise no matter what. So I think we should just celebrate the fact that we've actually had a good championship and it's just been damp squibs up until now, because those four are on a different level. Mayo finally proved that they're on a different level now.
Yeah.
And now it's going to be a great semi-final.
But as a lot of the reason we've had a good championship because Mayo have been involved in some great games because they haven't been on top form. They were in top form today. You know, the Cork game was brilliant. The Derry game was brilliant. You know, Mayo going down to Clare was really good. Like, really, what brilliant championship have we had? Tyrone have flown through the Ulster Championship. Dublin have breezed through Leinster as usual. Kerry have breezed through Munster. And in Connacht, outside of a good shock, old fashioned shock with Roscommon on Galway, like, the Galway beat Mayo, but was it a classic? You know, I'm trying to think of games that were,
I mean, like, you look at Monaghan Down, brilliant game. You had stuff at Armagh, like, we're involved in a few crackers in Tipperary, even against Kildare. There's been lots of great games through the qualifiers. Even, like, you know, Donegal Meath, didn't see the whole game, but you look back at the highlights and everyone raving about Michael Murphy. He had these moments that we do forget now when we come to August, and it's like, it's very easy to forget that too. And listen, I'm the one that always says, once we get to August, it's fine, and this is what happens, like, the cream rise, and then yeah, we get good games. Just what's happened this time is that all the best teams were pitted against weaker sides.
Yeah.
And, like, these were Division 1 teams. Like, Monaghan played, like, Roscommon played. The only difference is Cavan would have come in for Armagh, and Donegal would have come in for Galway, if you want the other Division 1 teams, and they all would have been hammerings as well. Like,
yeah,
this is just four teams who are just so far ahead now because they're such good teams. Like, and
yeah,
it's going to be great in the semis, if that's any consolation for anybody.
Yeah, well, it should. There's no reason why there won't be good semi-finals. But Kerry destroyed Galway, obviously, 118 to 13 points. Dublin destroyed Monaghan, 119 to 12, and that should have been more. Tyrone destroyed Armagh, 317 to 8, and Mayo just after hammering Roscommon, 419 to 8 points. So it's an awful beating, and, like, I mean, I don't know, like, I mean, if you look at the stats of it, it was, they were won by a combined total of 58 points, an average of 14.5 points. That, so now, like, it's pretty obvious we have a big four in football, even though Mayo kind of brought it today to actually get back up into that, because Mayo were struggling all year.
Yeah.
And, like, they seemed to play with a bit of abandon and a little bit of freedom today, and it was almost back to the James Horan Mayo, where they were pushing up on kickouts, intensely pushing up. They wanted that back, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But there's a lot of people saying that it's going to be, you know, the death of the Super 8s, because, you know, the Super 8s is going to be a washout because of this. And, like, I mean, I don't agree with that necessarily. The Super 8s will be a lot better than what it is. Some of the bottom four teams will have home games, which will be a lot closer than going up to Croke Park to play the big teams, because teams like Armagh, Roscommon, Monaghan, Galway, they'll shit themselves in Croke Park in comparison to the big four, and they'll have them at home. Now, they'll obviously have to play one game in Croke Park against those big teams, but two of them will be in one pot, two of them will be in the other pot. This is if they all come through the provinces, and then the other two teams will be below them. So it'll be a little bit like a round robin of four with two seeded teams and two lesser teams. Hopefully we'll get good games. We'll obviously get good games between the two seeded teams. Hopefully in the away games we'll get good games. I think it'll be it's definitely better than it is. Just because these are absolute hammerings doesn't mean that the Super 8s, but I think calling it Super 8s, it's Super 4,
plus 4
is a, like, it's Super 8 seeded or something like that. They should change the name of it.
Well, at the time though, I did say that this isn't a good idea because it didn't really It's an interesting theory. The Super 8, and it will be fascinating because we get some good games and there'll be some games that'll be on a knife edge and they need to win or they need to draw or whatever. That'll be good, but you still will have an unseeded team like Clare last year, even Tipperary. I know they did well, but Galway teams this year now, Roscommon, Galway
a few weeks ago, few years ago.
Like, they're going to have three games now where, like, you know, what's the difference? They're probably going to lose all those games. And
they're going to have more than three. They're going to have home and away. They'll have six.
Are you sure about that?
No, it's one game each.
Round
robin, yeah.
Yeah, so they have three games, and that's like, you know, that's sort of going to drag it out a little bit when they're not really in the shake up. So I don't see, like, the Super 8 was brought in to answer the provincial problem. It was brought in because Kerry only played two games, so it evens it out a little bit. Everybody has played a certain amount of games in by the semi finals. Brought in for money as well, now, they didn't really say that, but. Like, this does not solve it. Like, this is just lazy, old-fashioned thinking. It's just, like, we have to hold on the provincial championships because, for no other reason but the fact that they were always there.
Yeah, and we won't get into the ins and outs of the Super 8s. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, I mean, we all know that the Super 8s is a flawed model. It's in, you know what I mean? It looks like it's more how it's going to improve this stage of the competition.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, and it'll be fine. Like, there'll still be some good games, but I think it'll just ultimately, like, and again, it happens, like, it happens in tennis. The four big players usually get to the semi-finals if they don't meet each other. It happens in soccer a lot, the Champions League. It's always, you could say, if they don't meet each other, it'll be Bayern, it'll be Juve,
yeah,
it'll be Real Madrid and Barcelona. Like, they'll get to the top four if they don't meet each other. Like, that happens everywhere. You have better teams, and the Super 8s, like, whilst it might give them better tests, and it'll be good for Kerry because they should be tested more before they get to the semi-final. That's all it's going to do. It's going to delay it a little bit and they'll still get there.
Yeah, no, and like Malik O'Rourke said, if you come through the qualifiers and you have four qualifier games, you'll go straight into the Super 8s and you'll have another three games on top of that. So it'll be seven games in 7 weeks for teams outside of those top four which seem to have really big squads. Galway probably have a big squad as well. You're going to pick up niggles, and you don't get rid of your niggles, fix your niggles in the 1 week. You know, you might need 2 weeks, and it's not about being fatigued. I saw Mike Quirk made a good point. Maybe this result will put an end to all the nonsense about Mayo being exhausted with fatigue and having to play one game a week. Like, I think you can get over one game a week, absolutely. Like, I mean, you won't be training during the week. You'll be back fresh again. I don't want to go along with that argument. But, like, if the problem comes with the little niggly injuries, you get a dead leg, you go over your ankle, you give your hamstring a slight strain, you're looking at 10 days. You know, you need those 2 weeks to get back everybody. But it's the little knocks that you take. That's where it's the grueling schedule. If you stay knock and injury free, absolutely you can play every week. But Aidan O'Shea, interestingly, after the game he was interviewed, he was man of the match. He said to Joanne Cantwell that on this topic of Mayo being fatigued, he says their numbers are getting better. Now, Joanne pushed him and asked him what numbers are they, and he wouldn't tell her, but I presume it's GPS numbers, you know, ground covered numbers, whatever these type of numbers they have. Maybe there are other numbers that I don't know about, but I presume it's to prove that they are not fatiguing at all, that they are still working as hard. So, like, I mean, that obviously wasn't a reason. I think genuinely think that Mayo, like, we might as well talk about this game now, because Mayo are outstanding. We haven't seen them play like that under Stephen Rochford in the championship. We just haven't. We haven't seen them press up with reckless abandon, running from deep, half back line, Boyle, Higgins, Vaughan, Durkin, McLaughlin back to his best as a half forward, as a link man. I have not seen Mayo play like that since Rochford took over. I've seen a more conservative Mayo under his stewardship, and hopefully now they're back to the Mayo that we all loved watching under James Horan.
Well, I think, in fairness to Rochford, I think they played that way against Dublin, especially in the first game last year, like, where they were so just right up their behinds, all over them, like, and they were pressing everything, and the only difference was that they can't run over Dublin as easy as they could Roscommon. And then it was just like they were at that pitch, that level, and Roscommon just couldn't deal with it. Like, that was Mayo's athleticism at its very best, their hunger. And, like, yeah, you're right, like Roger said before the game, we've only trained once during the week, so we're fine. Like, it's, you know, there's no problem. We took a rest, like, we had another game, sharpened us up. Now they've had seven games. You say about the Super 8s, like, creating seven games for teams, they've already had seven games now going into the semi-final. Yeah, I think, actually, just watching that, I just think Mayo are back. That's the only way you can say it.
Hopefully Mayo are back, and hopefully, like, I mean, I think Mayo, no matter what way you look at it, they're always suited to that running game. Like, I mean, Vaughan is a machine. We talked Vaughan up to try and get back into this team. He's brilliant at just ghosting in and coming at pace. Higgins was outstanding today at doing the same thing. He still has a lot of pace for his age. But this kicking game that they're trying to play, doesn't always work, because Andy Moran, when he gets it, can't take on his man, and Killian O'Connor can't take on his man. And we've said this on the podcast, that you have to have, I'm all for the kicking game, but I'm on for the kicking game if that kicking game works for your players. If your players don't really, like, aren't suited to that kicking game, then don't play it. Yeah. Mayo are much more comfortable dominating teams with a running game, and that's what we saw today.
Completely sliced them open time after. It was hopeless from Roscommon. Like, you know, in defence, like, they were completely torn apart every single time Mayo went forward. Couldn't cope with the running, but the intensity and the strength of them in the back line, like, I think it was 21 minutes before Roscommon got a score. It was only their second shot of the game. Like, they were completely swallowed up around the middle. We don't even need to talk about that. But in the funny, like, Lee Keegan's out and suddenly they revert to this running game, which would have suited him down to the ground. Like, it would have even given them another step.
Yeah, no, it totally would. But, like, I mean, just to see him fit back into this, it's just going to be scary. But, like, obviously pushing up on those kickouts and putting that aggressive press on. Like, I mean, we saw this. I remember Mayo blew Galway away in Salt Hill that year. Like, I mean, just destroyed a good Galway team by doing this kind of thing and really, really pressurising them. And, like, did 7 turnovers from Roscommon kickouts at half time. Like, I mean, Colm Lavin, like, he reminded me of the Mayo goalkeeper whose name is, or the Galway goalkeeper whose name escapes
Lavelle,
me. Lavelle in the Connacht final. Where, if in doubt and you see yourself under serious pressure, get the bloody thing out. Like, if this happens once, like, I mean, that sends fear and anxiety all through the team. We said it at Connacht final. Like, I mean, Lavin, a blind man could tell you these are not working.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, these are being turned over in front of goals, and like I mean, you've lads coming off then on the run and they're just destroying you, and Mayo are up for it. Get it out the bloody field altogether. Like, I can't understand how those kickouts are so important to you that you're going to put your team under that much pressure. And Kevin McStay was interviewed after game and he said he was surprised at the level Mayo brought today. So maybe they thought to get away with these tippy-tappy kickouts and they weren't able to act on their feet and just get it out. Like, I think a good goalkeeper should go, uh-oh, this isn't working.
Yeah, we're changing plan. But obviously Mayo had anticipated it and completely targeted it. I mean, we were sitting watching it and you said something like, why isn't Killian O'Connor pushing up on that man? It's obvious it's going to him. But then it became apparent that they were almost deliberately leaving a man free,
and
two or three of them were completely like swamping him, and the guy didn't have a clue where to go, and it was either turned over or he didn't win a first time and he got a goal out of one of them. And just constant pressure, even out the field they would leave a man free, but by the time it's hanging there was two and three men just all over it, and Roscommon didn't have a hope.
I think a good tactic from kickouts is always to do that, is to say before you go out on the field, right, we want this kick out going to that wing back, right? So there's always a wing forward who's acting like he's half asleep, right? Yeah. So that's on. When he catches that ball, because, like, I mean, if you're going to a wing back and you're given that as the target, that ball has to travel 20 yards in the air, right? So the corner forward, the wing forward, the midfielder, three descend on him. So by the time, funnily enough, in Division 2 in Dublin football with Stephen Cluxton, I never saw a better example of a team sussing Cluxton's kickouts out. They had three lads on any man that ever caught Cluxton's kick out with us. Their tactics must have been sensational. It was in the Division 2 league final and I never saw us be more sussed out. But I was just watching it thinking, geez, they really have them sussed out. Every time Cluxton would go to either one of our wing backs, the ball was in the air too long. So by the time our man caught it, he was surrounded by three lads. It was like our strength was being turned against us. It was unbelievable stuff. But, like, I mean, a team just goad the goalkeeper into going to the wing back now, because if you goad him into going to the corner back, he'll have it in his hands by the time you can light on him. But if you go to wing back, you have a midfielder to close him, you have a centre forward to close him, and you have a corner forward to come out and close him, and to create turnovers like that.
And there was two that he ended up kicking over the line, and one just before that it was hanging up and I don't know who caught it. Fairness to the guy, he did catch it, but he was on the sideline as he caught it, ended up getting pushed over.
I think
the ref gave him an easy free out, like, but it was like, why would he want that ball hanging up there on the sideline? He's nowhere to go. Like, so yeah, Mayo completely sort of just pushed him into that sort of area where they wanted the ball to go. Like, they were controlling where he was kicking it.
Yeah.
And like Roscommon didn't respond. You're right, they should have just put a couple in. But then they weren't winning any around the middle either, were they? Because Seamus was
shaking.
No,
but you can't do much damage. You can't, like, the damage that you'll, you know, if you're losing midfield and you're set up, you should still have a few bodies back that if you lose it out there, it's not to the extent of the scores Mayo were getting off these short ones. These short ones were sussed, and it should have been sussed a lot sooner that this isn't working and we're abandoning it. And even seeing a goalkeeper run up, stop, run back, put his hands out. Like, I mean, you're in trouble at that stage. Like, I mean, would you wouldn't really see that from the top teams. But Mayo had 13 different scorers from play. Like, I mean, this really is Mayo at a level that we haven't seen them in a while.
Do you think they could have even scored more? Like, they left a lot out there, especially in the first half. Like, they completely dominated the match. Could have just run up. They could have been 20 points clear by the time half time came around. But I think you're right, yeah. Like, they have suddenly put themselves into that bracket again where we were all talking about Kerry, Tyrone and Dublin. Now Mayo, it's like, Jesus, well, of course, Mayo have been one of the best teams the last few years. And you look at that semi-final thinking, like, Mayo were in a really good place. Now they've played 7 games. They finally clicked. They'll have lots of confidence now, I'd say. Their numbers are up, as Aidan O'Shea would tell us. Kerry haven't really played anyone yet.
No, well, listen, yeah, no, that's true, but I'd still fancy Kerry. But listen, it's great to have Mayo back up into that category, because, like, they have been a fantastic team, and to see them playing like that we haven't seen them in a while, listen, it's great. And it's great to have a top four rather than a top three, right? Because that would have been a disaster if it was only a top three. Right, we'll be back in a second and we'll have Keane Ward with us, and we'll take a look back at the two games on Saturday.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it doesn't look great. There was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out 30, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, back in club and county.
Yeah, lads, what do we say about Saturday's game? Oh, Keane Ward is back in today after taking 3 weeks off during the middle of the championship. But look, that's okay.
Just pretend I'm Dermot Connolly and I got suspended.
So you're back in for the more serious stuff.
After Stevie tipped Armagh, we've got Keane back in now. Just, that was the last straw for Stevie.
A voice of reason. A voice of reason, thank God, is back on this podcast. Congratulations on getting married as well, mate.
Thank you very much.
Fair play to you. You look refreshed. You look a new man. There's a smile on your face there. You're just refreshed.
It's a bank holiday Monday.
It's not an ideal thing to be in the bank holiday Monday, and not ideal to be talking about two absolutely one-sided games. We're going to talk about them anyways, because maybe we'll take some bits out of them. Dublin Monaghan we're going to start with, lads, and this game just was such a one-sided affair. Monaghan never really gave themselves a chance the way they set up in the first half, and I can kind of see where Malachy O'Rourke was coming from, because Dublin got the two early goals against Kildare, game over. They do it against so many teams in Leinster, so keep it tight. They only played McManus and McCarron up front, everybody else was defending, and it was trying, you know, limit Dublin from getting that oxygen. But like, in reality, they just never really gave themselves a chance to get into the game. Dublin just dominated them.
Yeah, Dublin were just on top throughout. Unfortunately for Monaghan, they've just massively underperformed, even by their standards on the day. Now, look, at even with some of the players that were taken off during the course of the match for Monaghan, you don't know whether the qualifier matches took their toll on Monaghan, with players maybe carrying knocks into the game, I suppose, when you're away from the camp. But it looked to me like Monaghan were just, they were significantly off their best in terms of their intensity and everything. And when you're up against Dublin, I mean, look, you have no hope unless you're playing at your absolute maximum. You know, you're not going to be competitive against them, particularly in Croke Park.
Yeah.
They're just absolutely awesome at the minute. And look, preparation going into it, if Monaghan had come down a different route, you know, the more direct route, as they would have preferred themselves, less games, you know, they would have been in a better position to play against Dublin. But unfortunately, they weren't at the races. And Dublin, even though they weren't overly brilliant by their standards, were still just streets ahead of Monaghan.
Yeah, it's like a case here, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, because if you go up against Dublin and concede early goals by going for it, they'll say that's naive. What an idiot of a manager. That's the last thing you do. And you go up like Monaghan and you play with men behind the ball, two man full forward line, no half forward line, no ability to be able to break and with a kick pass and, you know, get the best out of your two inside men. And you're being, you know what I mean, criticised for that as well. Dublin presents so much problems for you that it's very, it always seems to be hindsight stuff. I wouldn't blame Maliki for keeping it tight at all in the first half.
I think the main problem really, aside from the tactical side of things, which is it only works if your players are at the right pitch. And unfortunately, Monaghan were just completely flat. Their energy levels weren't the same as what we see from Monaghan so often. Like, I mean, how many times do we see Monaghan in these big games and the intensity with which they tackle and swarm, and they just weren't able, they couldn't get to that standard. And a number of their players were just maybe out of form, like Drew Wiley particularly wasn't at the races at all at the weekend.
He's gone off the boil actually. Well, he's just had
a few bad games, and in fairness to him, like, you just don't know the impact that, you know, even physically or psychologically, that the car accident that he had in the build up to that first down game can have on somebody. So I wouldn't like to be overly critical of him, but it's just a case in point that he was so outstanding for them in previous seasons and he's just off that level at the minute. And unfortunately Monaghan just had too many of their players like that at the weekend.
Yeah, and it wasn't until Conor McCarthy came on in the second half, and again we talked last Thursday that he made such an impact, and sometimes you have to match Dublin's impact players with one or two of your own, and then you look at it in hindsight, he should have been on from the start. Again, it's hindsight stuff. I don't blame him for holding him in reserve and giving him that, but when he came on and Monaghan, you know, played a little bit more attacking, they got a lot more, you know, they could at least get a little bit more joy up there.
And the thing is, though, a lot of teams have held Dublin for a half, so maybe that was part of the thinking, if we can just keep it tight and then get the side on, score 2 points in a minute. Was it two big points as well, like, you know, and like that probably was the right thing to do, you know, it was easy to say in hindsight. But the thing with Dublin, like, they raise it as well. Like, you know, this is Monaghan's seventh game. They played six games, you get onto that. Like, that's 100% more games than Dublin, you know. That's a big ask of a team. But then you look before the game, and I was watching Johnny Cooper, and he's sprinting around shaking hands with everyone, sprints down to the corner, he goes over to Gavin Dugan, shakes his hand, and then straight away grabs him by the chest, starts grabbing him by the throat, pushing him, ball's thrown on, he's way up the pitch. It's like, where are they getting this hunger and energy from? It's like they just raise it every single game when they're peaking towards the final. And I'm looking at it going, why is he even arsed? Like, they've won two All-Irelands in a row, but I've never seen a player so driven. Like, as you see, that's just one example, but that's what all the Dublin lads were doing, and Monaghan just weren't ready for that, I don't think.
Yeah, in fairness, the Dublin are really able to raise it. And like, people talking back to the league game, the worst thing maybe Monaghan did with Dublin was do so well in the league, because Dublin respected him a lot. And like, let's talk about Jim Gavin's team for starters. He picked Lowndes as a wing forward because he was concerned about Carl O'Connell. That is the first time I've seen Jim Gavin play a defender in the forwards. Like, this is not the Jim Gavin of 2014. This, oh, look at us, we're pure, we don't cynically foul, we just go out and play the game. And this is the same type of football that's been passed down to me by the older generation. And you know, all this kind of guff he was coming out with when he took over manager first. Jim Gavin's a ruthless killer now. Like, Jim Gavin's not into that kind of owl.
He always was. He always was a ruthless killer.
Well, he was a romantic killer.
He was just spinning that old guff to anyone who'd listen to it and believe it. But no, he's a ruthless, pragmatic manager and always has been.
He's more now though, Keane. Like, I'll give you the example. Like, I mean, all the talk last Thursday we were talking about, you know, this aggressive push up to do on the kickouts, and they, you know, Kerry did it against them, now Dublin do it, where they bring everyone up and they're trying to win it up high. They abandoned that for Monaghan. They were concerned about Monaghan, so Keane O'Sullivan stayed back all the time, Johnny Cooper was back sometimes, so they tried to go zonal on the Monaghan kick out, but with one or two less men, because they weren't going to get caught like we were saying they could potentially get caught.
So, well, I think that's just a basic practical thing. If you look at the length of Rory Beggin's kick out, it would have been absolutely stupid of Dublin to push everybody up. You know, I'm sure on different occasions, if they were chasing the game, they would have had to do that. But they were always in such control and command that they were able to play the percentages, always keep that cover at the back. And really, the only time you're really going to test, you know, I suppose it's a bloody stupid statement, really, it's so obvious, but like, the only time you're really going to put Dublin under that sort of pressure and hurt them is if you start the game really well and get ahead of them. Because if you force any team to have to chase the game, you're playing the game on your terms, then you can control how the game is played if you're ahead. And that's the way Dublin are all the time. They're just, they work themselves into a lead position, and then they just play the game at their own pace. They retain possession, they pass the ball around, they don't take any risks. I mean, it's unbelievable to watch them play, because when you watch these games, you're thinking, right, you know, Dublin are awesome. And you sit down to watch them, you're thinking, right, you're expecting to see something, you know, different. Nobody does anything spectacular for Dublin, ever. It's always the most basic, simple hand passes are given, the kick passes are given. There's none of these killer balls tried. It's always nice, simple passes, the basics of the game, all done and executed perfectly, pretty much almost all the time. And that's why they're so good.
Yeah.
You know, if even when you look at some of their players individually in a game and you're saying, like, practically, like, their forwards never take their man on and beat them. Like, you know, if you're looking at a top class forward in most county teams, he's somebody who has to get the ball, beat a man. Sometimes, like Jamie Clark, maybe tried to beat 2, 3, 4 men on occasion and then try and get a score. Dublin never have to do that up front. They just work the ball, keep working the ball around, and they always have those support runners. And look, they're just so well coached.
Yeah, they're masters at not taking the ball into contact, and they've learned this down through the last few years, because they've been playing against these defensive teams a lot. They will not bring the ball into contact without having an out ball outside them. And I noticed this, right, lads, this is very interesting. When they were attacking and Monaghan were back in their defensive shape, James McCarthy will pull out he'll be on the sideline around the 45. Then Paddy Andrews was on the sideline around the 21. And there was two other, I think it was Mannion and not sure who the other, Lowndes was on the other side. So they are four lads posted on the 45 and the 21, hugging the touchline. So they're out balls. If you get caught up, you can throw it back out to them. Then up here at the very top of the whole thing, you have Fenton, you have Keane O'Sullivan, and you might have Kilkenny floating around going in and out. So they're always probing going in there. And the gas thing about having the four lads posted over the side, Monaghan had two men turned around facing them, having to watch them, because this is James McCarthy coming in a pace, he has to be watched. So immediately their middle is weakened because they have to have four lads posted watching these lads who are out on the sideline. So it's like this unbelievably well oiled machine that they know how to work. And like, I mean, it's, and like you said, somebody's coming off the shoulder, they got bottled up, it's back out, they'll try again, and they're patient. And like, this is why the Tyrone game is going to be so interesting. Do Tyrone push out on these lads outside, or like, you won't score from out there, so I think Tyrone will just leave them out there and just
Tyrone have their own system down so well. They're just saying, you're no threat if you're standing out there on the sideline, buddy.
But can you let James McCarthy get ahead of steam coming in from that angle?
I think Tyrone can. Like, they're that big and strong. I don't think Tyrone give a shit how you set up. Like, they've got their formation now, and that's the way they play, and then whenever you do outside of that, fine. Like, you know, they stick to their formation. That's why it is going to be really interesting. But just to go back to Keane's point, do Dublin maybe not take men on to a fault sometimes?
I think so. Well, I think that if you look, this, it seems mad, but if you genuinely look at all of those Dublin forwards as individuals, I don't think a lot of them, like Dean Rock is the best free taker in the country, but I don't think you could honestly say that any of their other inside forwards are the best in their position in the country.
Yeah.
I think you could easily pick six forwards from around the country that would be, on paper, or you know, you would think, yeah, they're better than them. But Dublin are just so good as a unit. Like, their forward unit works so well and so efficiently that they never have to do anything spectacular. It's always just so good. Like, they make the decisions at the right time. Like, they're all good decision makers, and they execute pretty well.
They're natural footballers, though, as well, to be fair.
They're intelligent, natural footballers, but none of them would really excite you, would they?
In a one-on-one situation, probably not. But maybe that one-on-one has gone out of the game now, Keane. Like, he can't be a one-on-one. Now, James McCarthy is. He's exciting, as in he'll get the ball and you say, right, he's going at his marker. But against Tyrone, he's going to be doubled up and he won't get it. Like, you know, like, I think the take on your man has been coached out of Dublin because it's just madness.
Well,
because
it doesn't work.
It doesn't really work, you know. And like, you saw Mannion, we'll talk about Mannion in performance of the weekend. He'll take you on, but he's only taking you on as a last resort, kind of, when he sees, right, there's nothing else on here, and he'll kick a score.
And really what he's doing anyway is he's not really taking anyone on. He's drifting down to a position almost to probe and drag in another defender. You know, he's almost like he's running down a blind alley a lot of time, Mannion. Like, you see him, he solos down along the wing into the corner, draws in maybe a second or a third defender, and then just passes the ball back out. So all he's doing is it's a tactical move almost. It's very clever, you know. He's drawn in more of the opposition defenders, which is what you would expect from quality forwards, that they would always try to suck in at least two defenders. And then look, by virtue of, you know, it's just basic maths. Like, if there's two defenders on me, there has to be somebody spare.
Yeah.
Has to be somebody free in a better position. So that's what Dublin are kind of doing. They're trying to just drag defenders in and then create that overlap. And the amount of simple scores they get is just unbelievable, just by virtue of their patience and intelligent movement.
Yeah, and like, I mean, Conor Callaghan was quiet, but against Kildare, he was just like, you have all the time in the world. It's the way they drag you from side to side. And the way they're set up that way, Conan, they have like three different angles that they're going to attack you with, and not just with one person. You know what I mean? They'll have James McCarthy here and they'll have Paddy Andrews. So when James McCarthy makes his break in from that left hand side, Andrews will loop around him. So two lads will have to go to James McCarthy. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced, and to the point where, unless you're going to commit to it like Tyrone do, would, I think Tyrone will go everybody behind. Like, I think even Mark Bradley will go back. Unless you're going to commit to that, you're at nothing with Dublin, because this kind of iffy, kind of half-hearted kind of effort, and like you said, Keane, Monaghan weren't at the intensity levels, but I don't think they could get hands on.
No, they couldn't get enough really a lot of occasions, and I'd agree with that. I think Dublin are so good that they don't actually take it to contact. So really, when you see this aggressive swarm tackle, it's when somebody has gotten bottled up by one defender and the second and third defenders come in.
Yeah.
But if you're making good decisions, you shouldn't really end up in that situation in the first place. So that's what Dublin do, that's what they do so well. But Tyrone are a different ball game with the way they set themselves up, and they don't, yeah, as you say, they don't care what way you want to play. This is the way, you know, they know exactly how they want to play, and they have it kind of down to a fine art for themselves. And it's just going to be just an unbelievably intriguing game. Like, it's the game we've probably been waiting for all summer, is to see Tyrone and Dublin finally go at it. And it's, thankfully, there's been no shock, and they do get to go at it, because to my mind, they're probably the two best teams at the minute. And it's just going to be really good to see them go at it.
Yeah, I know, and it'll be a good preview show when we got to talk about that. I want to talk about Jack McCarron here, lads, just quickly before we move on to Tyrone and Armagh. I've never seen a fella crumble so badly for championship in all my life. And then you wonder, at his age profile, we were wondering during the league, where has he been? And he's been struggling with injuries. And there was one or two years ago where he was on and off the team. And I kind of see why he's on and off the team now. Some of the chances he missed in the first half on his stronger left foot. Like, I mean, you can't miss those. Like, this is a fella who's razor sharp accuracy. Like, I mean, like, I would miss them, but I'd miss them in training. Like, you know what I mean? They're not my forte, but they're his forte, and he's missing them on the big day, and he missed them right throughout the championship. And, you know, being as accurate as him, he's just crumbled psychologically, it looks like, during the championship.
Yeah, and then what happened yesterday, because like, he won a lot of ball, and some good ball he won.
Still tried, yeah, in fairness to him, he was trying.
But then after a while, he wasn't even taking on that shot in his left foot. I remember one time he caught inside when it was on, just you catch the ball, turn it over, and he caught inside and tried to pass it off, got blocked. Next ball he won again, could have put it over, caught inside, think he got blocked on his right foot when it was actually on with his left. And yeah, you could just see it psychologically going away, where Michael Fitzsimons had McManus completely wrapped up, so they needed to get him into the game, but everything kept going to McCarron and it just wasn't happening for him.
No, it wasn't happening, and it's very difficult. I flagged this in the Fermanagh match, lads. Do you remember we were talking after the Fermanagh match and said you can't leave two men isolated on their own without a half forward line? And this has been a theme of this podcast, I think, during the summer. Are you playing a man to half forward line to link the two? Because all Dublin have men back, and without occupying them and pulling them out with a half forward line, you're not going to get good ball to McManus and McCarron. So your starting point should be those two, and you should get a system and work backwards from those two, as in, how do I get the best out of these two? Instead, Monaghan go the other way, and the best two players they have on the team are living off scraps. So, like, I mean, it makes no sense. And then you're seeing them come to the last game against Dublin and doing the very same thing. And it was only in the second half when McCarthy came and they had a bit of a triangle up there that they started seeing a little bit better movement and better ball.
Yeah, well, McCarthy made a huge impact when he came on, but look, unfortunately for Jack McCarron, he won an unbelievable amount of ball. Like, to be honest, I'd say Dublin would be slightly concerned about the form of Philly McMahon, because he looked totally off the pace, to be honest. Now, I know he's missed a few games, but he was well off the pace by when you compare him to the other defenders in there.
He's not a good man marker, Philly.
No, like, he really, like, on another day, I mean, if McCarron had taken taken the chances that he should have taken.
Yeah.
You would say he gave Finney McMahon an absolute roast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He could have got 1-4, but like, this is why McCarron was just gone from a shooting point of view. But I've marked Philly. Philly like would be nowhere near. Now, okay, listen, this is a good while ago and it was at club level. So he was full back, I was full forward. But it wouldn't have had him clocked as the tightest fella I ever. Yeah. He's too much of a footballer to be that type of fella, I think.
Does he want to be marking someone like you as well, though? Does he not want someone a little bigger? And like, isn't that a bit of a mismatch if someone like you sprinting around the full forward line?
Yeah, maybe, but still you have fellas there.
Oh, you had his number. I know well you'd have his number now.
No, he didn't. I'm not saying I got the better of him in any way, but you know a fella where you're like, oh, this is
he has in his head that he's a footballer, not a defender, in certain respects.
I think
probably at his stage he probably needs the big challenge of a big name player to be marking, and to be honest, in a game like that when they're so far ahead, I would get the impression, which I could be totally wrong, but Finney McMahon on a number of occasions went forward and didn't get the ball, and you could see him throwing his hands in the air while he wasn't being given the pass because he wanted to, you know, get a couple of scores, you know. Yeah. So maybe that was just the game was easy for them.
I wouldn't say he enjoys that job at all. No. He's too good for he's too good for it.
Yeah, he's an excellent footballer and kick passer and stuff like that. So I'm sure he likes to venture out the field when he gets the chance. But back to poor Jack McCarron, he just. Shooting boots weren't on. Unfortunately for him in the championship, he was a little bit wild in his shooting. And look, he just hit a dip in form. You know, his league form was absolutely superb. And look, it's just a disappointing thing for him. But championship is different. The pace of championship is different. You do have less time to get your shots away and stuff like that. So maybe that just that increase in level he's found a little bit difficult. He's not the most experienced of championship players. So I'd expect him to come back. To come back better for Monaghan next season, but unfortunately for them, with the age profile of their team, I don't know if Monaghan are still kind of on the up. You know, it's difficult to say.
Yeah, I heard Eamon McGee on RT Radio when I was leaving the match, and he was saying that he thinks this could be the end of the road for Malik O'Rourke, who's been an unbelievable manager, but 5 years is probably enough. And that system that he believes in so much, maybe they need a new direction. I don't know, maybe a lot of teams need new directions and realising that this isn't working, and the four forwards thing is the new way to go, and the two forwards thing is a little bit kind of Donegal Monaghan brilliant 4 years ago type thing, you know?
Yeah, they've been unlucky with the draw as well, getting Dublin twice in the last few years, and I mean, they're not at that level. Like, maybe he's doing as much as he can with Monaghan.
No, he is. Yeah,
he does. This look like a bit of a mismatch. Like yesterday, it was like, it looked like Dublin were much faster than anything else. Like, if you just break it down to complete basics, they just looked a faster team that Monaghan couldn't do much about.
Yeah, Dublin, in fairness to them, are awesome in terms of their athleticism and their pace.
Yeah,
and
but that's what Tyrone can match, lads. And I'd love to get sucked into a Tyrone chat here, but I want to hold it all for the preview show.
But just before we write that off, is it fair to say that Dublin might have been preparing for Tyrone yesterday? Even with Lyons at half forward, I was thinking that's sort of where Connolly's going to come in now, someone to match that work rate that he can do going back. Just sort of maybe setting up for what Tyrone
maybe, but I don't know. I don't think Jim Gavin looks that far ahead. But what I do love about Jim Gavin now is that you've no idea how Dublin are going to approach a game. You know what I mean? That the ego kind of thing, we'll just go out and play our game, that's gone. You know what I mean? And that's what got them caught in 2014. That's not getting them caught now. They're humble enough to say Carlo Connell is brilliant going forward, and we'll put it back on him. And that I love that.
To leave gaps for him. And in fairness to Dublin, you would have to say that's something that they've been doing. We've spoken about it, that they've gone much more conservative, you know, and look, in fairness to them, they're more controlled. They're not as exciting, but they're much more controlled, and to my mind, they're probably a much tougher team to beat now than they have been in previous seasons.
Yeah. Well, sure, we'll go from one machine, which is a blue machine, to the red machine, that's Tyrone. Four games, lads, they've scored 6 goals and 77 points. This is against defensive Ulster teams. Now, they've been blowing Ulster teams away. Armagh, the latest one to get absolutely destroyed, you know, and like, I don't know, Armagh kind of played into their hands as well. It's a weird one. Like, I mean, the one thing that jumped out at me, which I thought was absolute crazy, well, number one is no half forward line for Tyrone again, and I want to talk to you about that because I'm not sure whether that was by design or just the fact that the Tyrone half back line attacks so much. Like, and do you let them off just to hold your shape, or what do you do? Because if you don't have the half forward line, right, you have to work the ball up through the hands. Tyrone are getting back, then you're screwed. If you have a half forward line, at least you might get a kick pass and beat some of these lads, and then they can feed your inside line, so you have a chance. I would ask the question, why on earth? I was watching the game, would there be no presence in the half-forward line? Why? Geezer is a good football brain. Why? Because with a slow build-up, Tyrone are back and you're gone. And Tyrone are like three-quarter pace running back, a lot of them. You have to have a kick pass to beat them retreating or you're gone. They're back into that shape. They're too intense. You're turning over and you're back scrambling again. Is it because the half-forward line or their half-back line is attacking so much? And if you're a half-forward and you're on Tiernan McCann, do you let him off and go, we need someone else to turn him over. We've enough bodies back because without me being here, we have no chance of getting a score the other side. So, like, I mean, is this a game of cat and mouse where, you know, Tiernan McCann told us on the show that they don't all go to take turns. One person has to be left on the 40. Has to be left on the 40 as a ball, as an option for your team when you win the ball back. Or else you're screwed. You're screwed. And we saw Armagh time and time again. No presence there. Turning Tyrone over. And only Jamie Clark and McParland on the other side. So they have no choice but to hand pass up. By the time the hand pass up to the 45, Tyrone are all back. Like it was going on right throughout the game.
Yeah, well, I think much like you have maybe Tiernan McCann has it on different occasions, you know, different Tyrone players would sit and different players would attack. Well, on the flip side of that, what you should have on your, if you're to try and counteract that and pin some of them back, is by holding some players up the field. But it doesn't necessarily always have to be the same man. So somebody can make a break forward and they just hang up there. Like, you know, it's always a case of get back and recover, you know, in your own defensive area. But yeah, maybe if you always want to keep four up the field, maybe that has to be fluid as well, that you don't always have the same two guys in the full forward line, the same two out in front, that whoever makes a break forward, and maybe they just go the whole way into the full forward line and that's where they take their recovery.
Yeah,
so that you always then have four players up the field, which is what you want. Like, I mean, to me, it's, let's be honest about it, Tyrone are not going to go all the way forward. Dublin aren't going to continue piling bodies forward if you have players up the field that can hurt them on the counter attack.
Yeah,
because they're cautious teams, and on occasion they will go, but on some occasions you just have to say, well, I'm not going back after you. We have 10 or 11 men behind the ball. If we're as organised as we should be, because we're an inter-county team and we train 5 nights a week since last September, we've been training for a year, you know, we're organised, we know what we're doing. So if teams know what they're at, there's no need for your dangerous players, the guys that you want in the attacking third of the field, to be dragged back, running back after a cornerback. They should just be very clearly told, let him off, or if you are coming back, come back and sit there for a few minutes and we'd still have four boys up the pitch.
Yeah, that's a brilliant point, because, like, I mean, if they're so fluid as in taking turns, why can't the other team be look at the opposite way around and go, look, we won't all chase back. McCrory's in the full forward line sometimes. Like, I mean, it's heartbreaking stuff following him back. And
it's stupid to follow him back.
And he's doing that just to mess your shape up.
Absolutely.
Just to leave
on Grimley. He wanted to stop Grimley getting forward, so that was probably just to take him into defence and get him out of the way. Like, you know, I think Armagh were hedging their bets a little bit, because, like, you look at it. The free score in Niall Grimley midfield.
But McCrory wasn't. I thought McCrory was on Stephen Campbell.
Yeah, well, either way, McCrory spent a lot of his time almost as being the. He was nearly closest man to Bradley on a good few occasions when Tyrone broke forward.
But the point we're trying to make is that McCrory is going forward only for one reason, I think, because he's not going forward to score, and he's very rarely gets the ball when he goes forward. He's going forward to mess your shape up.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he's doing.
But that's why I think Armagh were playing safe, because you mentioned Tyrone half back line, but who are they? There are like 9 or 10 of them. I think they were a little bit spooked, thinking we don't know who we're going to be following back, so we want to just be ready for it. But I don't think
it's relevant anymore who you follow, because nobody really does man to man marking.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to get back and cover the zone. So it doesn't matter who the players are to go back to cover that zone, and it doesn't matter what opposition player is closest to you. If a team is well drilled, like Tyrone are, Tyrone may be, you know, certain players maybe on occasion are tagging certain lads, you know, but that's mainly in their full back line, or if it's the real danger men on the opposition.
Yeah.
But aside from that, everybody in that middle third, it's totally fluid. You know roughly the position that you're supposed to be getting back into, but if somebody else on the team fills that position, you just fill their position. Like, that's the way it works. So it's totally fluid, so it has to be the same way when you're defending and attacking. That's the way it has to be.
Yeah.
Like this thing of I'm the corner forward, I'm marking the corner back, I'm going to run the whole way back down the field with him, is absolutely ludicrous carry on. It doesn't make any sense. All that you're doing is you're... Like, Bradley doesn't do it for Tyrone, or very rarely does it. His job is to be up there and to buzz around when Tyrone do break, that he can provide that out ball. And in fairness to him, that's a nightmare of a job, because he rarely gets the ball.
He does it with enthusiasm.
Oh,
though,
he does
it.
But he's a brilliant player.
Yeah, like,
if Bradley was playing in the full forward line for Dublin, we'd be absolutely raving about him. We'd be thinking he was a genius because he's that good. But it's just, for their system, he's doing a brilliant job. Now, I'm sure if Tyrone were honest about it, they'd love to have a fella who's a foot taller doing that job.
Yeah.
Do you know, and athletic. Like, if they had somebody like your man Harrison from Down, I'm sure they'd be delighted, because it would allow them to, you know, play a variety of balls into their full forward line, whereas they are slightly restricted with Bradley, the type of ball that they can deliver in.
Yeah.
But
I think you're right, though. Like, and we are saying the halfback line, just because Tiernan McCann probably Hamsey is a sweep, kind of holds that centre back position. McCann will hold the wing back position a bit more. Sure, Peter Hart just goes everywhere. McGeary and these lads, they go everywhere. So I know it's all in the middle third. So it shouldn't be as hard to keep four forwards up there at all times and have a presence. It shouldn't be, because, like you said, at all times you'll have Colm Kavanagh and maybe Hamsey back there covering. So, like, I mean, if you leave two lads back and they're in around their area,
if you're playing against Tyrone and you look at it, right, I would say if Colin McCarron is breaking forward, I wouldn't be bothered going after him. If McCrory is going forward, I wouldn't be bothered going after him. If McNabb is going forward, I wouldn't
or
be
McNamee,
bothered
going
after
him. But McCarron and McNamee are their two taggers. They don't go. They very rarely go forward now, but McCrory's always going forward, and you should let him go. Tiernan McCann needs to be picked up. Like, I mean, you obviously have players that are said, when Tiernan McCann crossed the halfway line, I want you pushing out on him. And instead of going really defensive on Tyrone, you actually try to man up 11 on 11 on Tyrone when they're attacking. Forget about your own sweepers, but have your four on the other end. You know what I mean? And you're hoping to turn Tyrone over in a one-on-one situation, and then you're breaking on them. Because all I see Tyrone doing, and we've said it here, is that they're dictating the way the game's played, because they're Absolutely. Messing you up. You're not as good as this game as they are, and they're dragging you into that game. And Armagh just completely played into their hands.
Yeah, well, it's going to be really interesting to see. Oh no, we're not going to go into the preview thing. Look, it was disappointing from Armagh's perspective, and you could see the complete frustration for Jamie Clark on several occasions, you know, where he's... Look, in fairness to him, he was always trying to do too much, but that's because he kind of had to, because there was no support, and he knew they had to try and get scores on the board, and it becomes very demoralising then, because, you know, Armagh started making bad decisions when they're trying to chase the game, and it's just a procession then for Tyrone.
But Jamie's breaking from the full forward line, right, because there's two of them in there. This is the same old problem, because Jamie's like a real enthusiastic player as well, and he out of desperation, he's breaking.
Yeah, he's
then,
working everywhere,
and he's breaking outside the 45 when he gets it then, and like, it's so brain dead. And then he gets it out there, turns around and looks, and the Tyrone lads have filtered back in, so he's no ball into McParland, who might be in there. Then he fists it off back out, and next minute it could be at midfield, and we're starting all over again. Yeah. So what benefit was there even from that kick pass into Jamie? There was none, no benefit of it.
And it's very difficult in that scenario, because, like, Jamie Clark, because he, like, Tyrone would know about him, they would have somebody who would follow him no matter where he went. And if Jamie Clark ended up back in the half-back line, whatever lad was on him, McCarron would actually end up doing more damage to Armagh. He'd probably end up getting a couple of scores, because Jamie Clark wouldn't be tuned in to track him and mark him. So, unfortunately, Jamie Clark could have spent the whole game trying to be dangerous and stayed in the full forward line and limited his movement. And we might all be criticising him for not trying to get himself into the game, but it's just it's a no-win scenario for an inside forward there, because if he says, right, I'm going to do what I think is the right thing for the team here, which is I'm going to stay the whole way in here and try and be dangerous, try and get the ball in the danger zone. But if your team isn't good enough to get the ball up to you, he could spend the whole game and maybe touch the ball three times.
Yeah.
Whereas he was coming out trying to get on the ball and drifting out to the half-forward line, but even still, he ends up in no man's land, being no threat, getting the ball out in the half forward line, and Tyrone don't care if he gets the ball there.
Should that not come down to the manager, though? To say, like, if he's inside not winning ball, then the manager should be able to spot that and be like, right, let's change it now. But he shouldn't really be taking it upon himself, should he, to go and get on the ball?
Well, I think he had to, because there was only two of them up there. I mean, it's the real thing we're talking about all the time. If there were more bodies like Tyrone, they just had no real link. Like, how many times did Grugan get on the ball in the first half of the game? And Grugan was doing magical stuff at times. Like, he was creating space for himself, surrounded by two or three Tyrone men, and he was getting his head up and he was trying to look to give the ball in, but there was nobody in there for him to give it to.
Yeah.
Because Jamie Clark, because of his eagerness to work, he was making that run early. But against a packed defence like that, if Jamie Clark is making that run, somebody had to stay in there. Like, against Tyrone, you have to have somebody who nearly marks the Tyrone goalkeeper and says, right, I'm going to, every time we're on the attack, I'm going to get in here and I'm going to stand beside Niall Morgan and I'm going to wait and wait and wait. And then I'm going to make my run at the right time.
Yeah, Geezer said
that
after the game,
that requires unbelievable patience.
It does, and discipline. But Geezer said on that point, we wanted to move the ball quickly and we didn't. We got caught up. How can you move the ball quickly when you don't have people to move? Like, they were a kicking team, and I said here on last Thursday, are Armagh going to be able to play that kicking game against Tyrone? And we were discussing that. But the way Armagh set up, they could never play the kicking game.
Yeah, well,
couldn't. And you can't move it fast if you can't move it fast.
Yeah,
well, and the fastest way to move it is through the foot.
Yeah. But the only way to look at it is that no matter what way you set your team up, like, it has to be very clear from the management. Like, players on the field will have an appetite for work and they'll chase. Like, if you're playing wing forward, you're not just going to go, oh, I'm not going to chase this lad. Like, they'll go back and they'll chase after him. But that has the effect of, like, completely destroying your own team's shape.
Yeah.
So
you're right.
It is something that has to, like, if in the middle of a game you're playing for Armagh and you see Grugan and one of the Tyrone lads is going bombing forward and you see Grugan standing up there, you're going to be going, what are you doing? You know, you have to chase him back.
Well,
it needs to be spoken about beforehand, that everybody knows what the plan is.
Do you know what you do? And this, I think there's a whole new shift needs to come in here now, because the shift has come from the way you're attacking and you're abandoning your man and you're just going forward. Like you said, if you're in the half forward line and there's a bit of shapes game and Tiernan McCann takes off, you run across onto Hamsey because you know Hamsey's not going to go. You run across onto him, and if Peter Hart is gone, Peter Hart's probably a wing forward anyways, but if you're running across on Colm Kavanagh, who's hanging around there, suddenly it's four on four. And on
no,
the other side,
someone has
to tag McCann. Someone's job is not to sweep and stand around doing nothing, because you've got Bradley in there. You're pushing out on these lads that are going forward. So suddenly, when you win it back, there's a four on four up there, and Tyrone are suddenly going, shit, this isn't the way we had planned this going. You know, that kind of way.
Well, that's the problem, though, when teams are reacting instead of acting. Like, they're going out and reacting to what Tyrone want them to do instead of saying, right, this is the way we're playing. We've got these boys detailed to be back for these runners to come onto. Then that's what we're doing. Like, you know, that's what Tyrone do. It's not what Armagh were trying to do. There's too many players yesterday not really knowing what they were at.
But like, do you think Dublin now coming in, okay, we don't want to get into this, but any team playing against Tyrone, not to follow their men breaking, but to push across onto their two sweepers. So you have four on four. So their two sweepers now suddenly are marking someone. Their breakers are gone, but you have to tag the breakers.
Don't push across, just you stay in the forward lane.
Well, let him come across on you.
Yeah, look, I think it's just very interesting, because we speak about the way Armagh want to play the game. But it's like Donegal were the first team to do it, as we all know. They were the first team to really change it, that no matter what way you want to play your football, if you play Donegal, you can't play the way you want to play.
No.
And that is the same way with Tyrone now. If you go out to play against Dublin, you can play the way you want to play. You just might get beaten by them because they have so much athleticism and you won't catch them. So teams go defensive against them because of fear. But against Tyrone, you have no choice. You cannot play the way you want to play.
Yeah.
Because the whole shape of the game is totally alien to everybody. So it presents a whole set of different problems. So you could spend your whole season trying to play your football a certain way. When you play Tyrone, that all goes out the window. You have to devise a specific strategy and understanding and shape to your team specifically for Tyrone. So I think I know we're going to preview stuff, but it's just going to be unbelievably interesting to see Tyrone Dublin and to see how Dublin approach it, because Dublin have gone risk averse. They have gone sort of more conservative, I think, this season. So it will be very interesting to see, will they devise a way to try and pin Tyrone back and blunt them?
I think
them?
They will. Yeah, I think they will. I think you've got Jason Sherlock, you've got Jim Gavin, you've got Griff, you've really good football brains in there, and they'll definitely be listening to the podcast and they'll be thinking of things that they... Just quickly, lads, because I want to move off this, another thing Armagh did, which was madness, is that they played they played Brendan Donaghy as a full time sweeper.
Yeah.
Now, so they conceded a throw-in kick out because they had a body less up there. Now, are you for real that you can't have Donaghy push up for a kick out? And there's going to be enough lads around midfield. When the kick out goes, have someone run back into the sweeper position. Why have him there full time and give Tyrone the kick out? It made no sense. Like, it was just madness that he didn't have any influence on the game. Like, Tyrone push up on kick outs. The minute the kick out's in the air and it's not in Colm Kavanagh's area of the field, he's gone sprinting back.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much time when the ball's still in flight, yeah, that if it's not on your side of the field, get back there and be the sweeper. But at least push up and actually be aggressive on the kick out. Armagh left him back the whole way through the game.
It wasn't just Donaghy. I think they had four free men back there. And I think they were trying to prepare for Tyrone. They had like five men marking Mark Bradley. They didn't do a good job on it and saying that. Like, Donaghy was pretty useless. Bradley won some ball yesterday, like, compared to what he has been winning.
But Mark Bradley was brilliant. Like, I'd love to talk a bit more about Mark Bradley. Like, I mean, he's just a brilliant, brilliant player, and he's so elusive and he's so strong.
Yeah, but Armagh, they had Vernon, they had Kieran O'Hanlon back there, whipped off in the first half. They had all these players just sitting around their 45, but Tyrone were still able to get more players forward then before the rest of the Armagh cavalry could get back. So Tyrone actually were still able to overrun all these free players waiting to defend.
Yeah, look, it was a total mess. It was Division 1 versus Division 3.
And I think,
Hart was
just
right.
On that point as well, look, the basic skill level and decision making at times from our players just wasn't as good as Tyrone players. You know, they ended up, I know I give this example a couple of times, but it's such a bad sign of your decision making when you get the ball with time and space and you end up getting bottled up and turned over. It shouldn't happen, particularly in Croke Park, which is a massive field. You should be able to stay away from the opposition and keep possession.
Yeah, like Dublin
do. And it happened with Armagh on a few occasions where they just needlessly ended up getting turned over. It wasn't even a case of, you know, being swarmed inside the opposition 45. Just bad play, and look, the golfing class was evident.
Yeah, okay, we'll be back in a second with performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at me
of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Yeah, AIB's performance of the weekend. Now, and we did a poll on the website last night. AIB have tweeted it out. The four nominations were Peter Hart, Paul Mannion, Matty Donnelly and David Mulgrew. At the moment, Peter Hart is on 40%, Paul Mannion on 24%, Matty Donnelly on 19% and David Mulgrew on 17%. So there's a clear winner with Peter Hart, who's like, I mean, he's just an absolute machine. But I want to start by talking about Paul Mannion, lads, because he's like, I mean, so left footed. And you always, like, I've played with players that are so left footed. When I went into the forwards, my right obviously wasn't as good as Mannion's left is, but I said I'm going nowhere with only one foot. But I was trying to analyse this of how Mannion can cut back in so effortlessly on his left foot, knowing that Ryan Wiley knows he's left footed, and it's his blinding pace is the reason. Because Wiley, if he fakes to go down on your outside, like, Wiley can't go, right, I'll let him go there because he's going to kick it over right with his right, but he's just going to scorch you. So Wiley has to commit to defending that. So it's almost like a dummy solo, only he's using his pace to make Wiley go like an eejit that way. And then suddenly he's all the time in the world to cut back in on his left. Like, it's a beautiful thing to watch, but he'd never be able to do it if he didn't have that massive threat of he'll go the outside route of you and take you the long way and burn you. So you have to get that yard on him that way. Then he's drinking back and suddenly you're gone and he's sticking it over, and he's very accurate off the left.
Yeah, and he has he's a brilliant striker of the ball as well, which means he's dangerous from a number of positions. Like, he can score with limited sort of backlift from distance as well. And one thing about him as well, which is a great skill for any forward, is the trajectory of his shots are very high, which means it's very difficult to block that. You need to be right on his boot because the ball is just getting, you know, it's straight up off his boot rather than being kind of drilled at a lower angle, which is easier to block. And having so many support runners off his shoulder certainly helps to cause a bit of confusion for defenders.
It helps him getting doubled up on anyways, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. But, like, I mean, what you saw Wiley for his first pint, he committed so much to Mannion's kind of fake at a run. He slipped because he's like, shit, he's taken off here. And like Mannion just went, see ya, and cut back in, and it's over the back.
And the brilliant thing about that is that Wiley would obviously know him very well from playing together in UCD, so no doubt he knows him inside out. You would expect that that would give him a little bit of an advantage, but I suppose sometimes it's like the Sean Kavanagh dummy. Sometimes everybody knows what's going to happen, but it's still very hard to stop.
Yeah, no, he's Paul. And you know, would you believe I was told in the press box before the Carlow game about Paul Mannion, who's one of the journalists, I won't name him, said, Paul Mannion's not a bad call for Footballer of the Year this year. Seemingly the things he's doing in training is phenomenal, that he's almost taking his game to a whole new level. And I've been kind of watching out for it, and his game has gone to another level. Like, I mean, not to the Player of the Year point, but this is a fella who I think all this stuff just comes handy to Mannion. Like, it's just he's just able to do it. Do you know that kind of way? And I'd say it's like, you know, I'm very surprised he hasn't worked on his right foot as much, but maybe, look, he just doesn't have to when he has the pace. I'm going to give these two to you, Conan. We'll start with Matty Donnelly, because you did some stats on sportsshow.ie on Matty Donnelly. And again, Donnelly's just blowing it out of the park, possessions wise, take ons, you name it. Matty Donnelly is the all action, yeah, kind of middle third master.
Yeah, and I like, normally hate those possession stats, because what do they really mean? They don't tell you anything. It just gives you a number of how many times the boy had the ball. It doesn't actually say what he's done with it. But every time Donnelly gets the ball, he does something with it. Like, he takes men on whenever he can, or even like fakes to take them on, and then it creates a bit of space for himself. He was always looking for Mark Bradley straight away as well. Like, he was virtually playing right half back again, you know, all these lads sitting in. And he seems to be this first layer then, where he's out free all the time, ball comes to him, everybody else comes off his shoulder, then suddenly free again on up the pitch in the opposition 65, and he's piercing holes, and that was brilliant. Like, it was actually just a joy just following him around yesterday, just watching everything he was doing. And
he's well able to break a tackle too, isn't he? He's so strong. Like, I don't think his size, if you ever stood beside Matty Donnelly like in person, geez, he's a big man. And another fella, met him up in Garvati, Niall Sludden, looks really small in the field. He's,
you were saying that before, yeah,
muscles bulging out of this fella. Like, these Tyrone lads might not tog out brilliant, might be something to do with the white jersey as well, but like, I mean, these lads are absolute machines, you know. They're really, really strong.
Yeah, and that's why I think the real chance against Dublin. I was talking to
they don't either.
I was talking to a taxi driver after.
We're all getting sucked into this Tyrone Dublin thing.
He was on Hill 16.
I can't wait for that preview show. I really can't.
Your man says to me, he goes, who do you think's going to win then, Dublin or Kerry? And I was like, oh, hang on a second, buddy, this isn't clean cut. Like, and he said, well, what do you mean? I was like, Tyrone might beat you. And he just had no concept of how could Tyrone beat Dublin. So now, actually, as a Derry man, I'm on the Tyrone bandwagon now. I'd love to see it. But,
well, to be honest with you, I'm getting on a Tyrone bandwagon as well. Not saying I'm 100% behind it, but their players are very likeable now. They're not all their messing and diving and a lot of things that was associated with them. I said this last week, that's all gone. Tiernan McCann, Matty Donnelly, Sean Kavanagh have all been on the podcast. They're real sound, come across as real nice fellas. I'm telling you, Mickey Hart then coming out after the game saying, well, they're Division 3, we're Division 1, we should be beating them, yeah, with a thing. I like all that stuff. I actually think Tyrone are a much more likeable team now than they were maybe 2 years ago. David Mulgrew, lads, who got dropped, needs a mention for performance of the weekend, because he was dropped for the game, and the easiest thing in the world can do, it can go, you know, it's a big game in Croke Park. And I'm after missing out on it. He came on and scored 2-1. His second goal was outstanding, as in he went faint to hand pass, but when he got it back in his hand, he had it dropped on his foot so quick that the goalkeeper didn't even have time. He didn't think a shot was coming that fast. But that was beautiful. That was like an inside forward Predators type of goal. And, well, also I think that Blaine Hughes, while you talk up his kickouts an awful lot, his lack of height is seriously, it's like the Mulgrew's first goal, that, like, I mean, a goalkeeper should really be doing, making a better effort at saving that. I think he's too small. But Mulgrew really gave a beautiful answer, and 2-1 in the length of time he's on the field was outstanding stuff too.
Yeah, and for such a young player as well, to be able to handle the setback of being dropped and to react in such a positive manner is, you know, it shows more about the mentality of that Tyrone group as well, which they will absolutely need for the battle ahead against Dublin. So yeah, look, it's very impressive from him.
Yeah, very good. Peter Hart, like, I don't know what more we say about Peter Hart, Conal. I'll give this to you as well, because you love Peter Hart. But he is class, and again, he's another one of these Tiernan McCann, Peter Hart, Niall Sludden, you know, Matty Donnelly. These pace, strength, athleticism, all those qualities in that middle area that can compete with Dublin. There's no doubt about that. We're getting back into Dublin stuff again. But Peter Hart is on that little level above where he's got that touch of class.
Yeah, and that's the thing with all these tournaments, and I know he is a level above, but they're all brilliant natural footballers. Like Mulgrew is a gorgeous footballer. Like they're all class, like pure class, but they're just playing in this athletic system because they're good enough to do it. But Peter Hurt was playing very centrally yesterday and he was devastating. You know what I love most about him? Even when he sort of loses control of the ball or he gets a big tackle, he never seems to like lose possession. He somehow gets it out and it's always another lovely pass that he finds that no one else sees. So many times he has the ball and he just gets that reaction from the crowd where it's like, ah, oh, didn't see that. Like that's brilliant. And now you see it because Peter Hart's seen it. It's just a terrier. He's just coming straight through the middle and he can do whatever he wants with it.
Yeah. So who do we have for Mayo and Roscommon?
I didn't put down any Roscommon players anyway. No. He didn't make the cut. Jesus, take your pick from Mayo. Aidan O'Shea.
Aidan O'Shea is definite. Aidan O'Shea is marked down. Aidan O'Shea won the throw in. He won a throw up.
Set the tone.
He broke forward. He won freeze. He scored a point. He drove Mayo into that game. And like people, all these cliches about your leaders and setting the tone, all these, like these can be overplayed sometimes in my eyes, but there are also leaders and, you know, spiritual leaders for a reason. That when your leaders look like they're on the ball, like there is a lot of sheep on panels as well, and they go, right, we're up for
they
this.
Lead the way.
It wasn't just a speech in the dressing room. We actually are up for it. You know, they're actually practically on the up. And I thought Aidan O'Shea did brilliantly for that today, and he was rightly man of the match, I thought. You know, goes into midfield for the throw-ins, then plays at centre half forward. The idea that he goes any further than that, I think, is a mistake.
Where is that coming from?
I don't know.
Again, afterwards, like, you need to put him inside because they get lost out the field. Like, Jesus, they get lost inside with all these boys hanging off him.
Exactly. And another thing is, like, I mean, I think we did stats here on the show last year in the Dublin drawn game, that six balls went to Aidan O'Shea in the first half of that match alone, and they got nothing off any of them. So Philly McMahon has the upper body strength. He's a beast of a man. And Keane O'Sullivan turn around and tag Aidan O'Shea, and Aidan O'Shea not being a natural in there, he's at sea in there, he's not at the races in there. Aidan O'Shea has been absolutely brilliant and fantastic for Mayo against Derry and against Clare and now again today, playing at centre forward and being the grafter and the worker. Look, we're blue in the face saying this. I mean, I don't know where this idea comes
from. He goes forward more now, but that's because he's got the freedom. He's got two midfielders there already. He can go out to the middle and affect the game, but he's free to go forward and not have to keep going back if he doesn't want to. Like, it's the very best of him, and we're looking at him playing his best performances now in that position, not because he's further forward. Like, you know, he's playing there, he's getting further forward from that position, so you don't need to suddenly put him further forward to keep him doing that.
Yeah, and then he's playing facing the goals still.
Gets ahead of steam.
Inside, he's playing with his back to goals, and Aidan O'Shea can't play with his back to goals anymore. He's just not, like, he could potentially have played well today with his back to goals, but he won't do it against Kerry and against Dublin because it's not his natural game. And, like, I mean, if you're not playing your natural game against machine teams like those, like, I mean, you're at a disadvantage straight away. I thought Keith Higgins was outstanding, scored a brilliant goal, really broke the line on more than one occasion. And I think we should probably look into the first half a little bit more than the second half, because, like, I mean, that's when the heads will drop. But when Mayo really set that tone, Higgins was instrumental in that, and that's breaking that line. And, like, again, when have we seen Keith Higgins doing breaking that line? Keith Higgins has been sweeper and a conservative sweeper at that, not venturing forward. And that's another one. When James Horan was there, you had that exciting half back line, but you also Keith Higgins attacking from cornerback. Like, they were attacking you from everywhere. You had Alan Dillon and Kevin McLaughlin buzzing around the half forward line. You know, that's, I think,
Jason Doherty.
Jason Doherty as well. And, like, I mean, that today was as close to those type of performances as I've seen.
Yeah, and like Keith Higgins summed up the difference in athleticism in the two counties. Like, he just gave those Roscommon jerseys a clean pair of heels every time. Yeah. Like, and, you know, some of them were getting actually a merch on them and a run, and you saw the gap opening up, and it must have been depressing for a fan to watch, because it was just like, we are on a different level to you boys. And Higgins summed it up, because any time he wanted to go forward and go straight, he did it.
Yeah, no, exactly. So we have loads of good nominations. We've Paul Mannion, Peter Hart, Matty Donnelly,
Parsons, you throw him in as well.
Keith Higgins, Parsons was good, Aidan O'Shea, Seamus, David Mulgrew. We've a long list of nominations this week, but the AIB performance of the weekend, it would have to go to Aidan O'Shea. He's a player I really like, much maligned. Another quick one on that is Mayo are on a very strict media ban all this year, and I actually don't blame them. They're the one county I actually don't really mind, and I understand why they have to do it, because of the the absolute nonsense they have to put up with if one of their players says something. They get an awful lot of negative press. They've been on the go for so long. They're still giving us great performances. Well, great games. Up until today, great games. Now a great performance. And Aidan O'Shea really is one of the top players in the country, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. So Aidan O'Shea is our Performance of the Weekend winner. Congratulations, Aidan.
Peter Hurt. What?
Aidan is also an AIB ambassador, so I'm sure he has loads of AIB bugs, but none of them have GAR Performance of the Weekend.
Peter, don't worry about it.
None of them have GAR Performance of the Weekend on him. Right, listen, we'll be back. I think it's Thursday week. We've no football next weekend. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.